Today's podcast is sponsored by Western Reformed Seminary. Visit wrs.edu and listen for more at the conclusion of today's podcast. Welcome to Mortification of Spin, a casual conversation about things that count, with Carl Truman and Todd Pruitt. Mortification of Spin is a weekly podcast from the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals. Let's join this week's conversation.
Well, welcome to Mortification of Spin. I'm one of the two hosts, Carl Truman, Professor of Biblical and Religious Studies at Grove City College in Western Pennsylvania. And I'm here with my usual co-host, Todd Pruitt, pastor of a PCA church in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Good to have you on the show, Todd. What am I saying?
You know, Carl, I always think of myself as the guy who's on Carl's podcast. Even though
that's how I think of you as well,
even though I think of myself kind of as the glue that keeps this together. I think my labors and my insights are what make us the sort of indispensable resource that we have become. But, That's just me and my wife.
For the disillusioned and slightly grumpy middle-aged guy. Exactly. Or I have to say the provost at Grove City College, his wife is a listener. Amy, if you're out there, you too. Qualifies middle-aged and grumpy now. So
fantastic.
The company you're keeping. Anyway,
August.
We have a special guest today. His name is Patrick Daly. He is a manager of sales and marketing at Banner of Truth. Many listeners probably have benefited immensely over the years from Banner of Truth books. I remember when I was a young student, Banner of Truth, they were inexpensive, beautifully produced hardbacks and always worth reading. And Pat is one of the masterminds who's helped the sales of Banner books in the United States. He's also just
did Carl read that right, by the way, Patrick? Mastermind, did he read that right? Was that okay?
Yeah, and I need the money should be deposited by Zelle in my account by the evening, Patrick. He's also next summer going to take up a position as vice president at Greenville Presbyterian Theological Seminary, where, of course, the head honcho is a very good friend, John Master. So Pat will be heading out to that hotbed of patriarchal, misogynistic, goodness knows what, in Carolina, of which we're very, very fond, by the way.
We love Greenville.
Yep. Yeah, we do. We love Greenville. Particularly now that John's in charge.
Absolutely. John, and we've had Michael Morales on twice, one of their faculty members who just is a marvelous scholar and has written some excellent, excellent books.
Patrick's brother-in-law, Bill Van Dudevard, also a friend, is heading there to be a professor as well soon.
So, Patrick,
welcome to the show.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Yeah, Bill and I we're taking it over. It's going to be a family-run farm by the end of the year, but we got our plans. It's good to be with you. You know, I wouldn't describe myself as the mastermind behind sales. There's certain things that are easy to sell and certain things that are harder to sell. And good quality Banner books are in the easier category. So they can basically sell themselves. You just have to tell people about them.
Yeah. Well, here's why. Well, actually, I'm going to come to why I called you a mastermind in a few minutes. But first of all, I wonder if there's a rumor I've heard that I wonder if you could confirm or deny. I'm told that you were once a very skilled Irish dancer.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Or is that just misinformation put around by the National Partnership in PCA?
It's time to tell the world my story, so I better come clean. I did grow up doing Irish dancing since I was from the age of 4 and competed internationally about a dozen times. Used to travel to Ireland 3 times a year to compete in Worlds. I gave it up right before the end of high school. My parents spent a lot of time and money driving me around North America for different competitions. I was a 9-time Canadian champion for my age group. And
goodness.
Yeah. I don't pull it out unless I need to get tickets to things.
Right.
And then I use those gifts sparingly. So
now is Riverdance still up and running? I mean, do you have a chance? Do you have a shot maybe to revisit that dream?
Is your stage name Michael Flatley?
That's right. No, Mike, actually Riverdance is doing the 25th anniversary right now. They're coming I think in 2022, you can book tickets. I'm not getting paid for that. But no, there was a point in my career where I did think about going into like dance, like for a profession.
Me too.
I decided not to. So wow. I'm sure I'm in a similar company.
So well, the rumor I heard was true. I can't even remember who said that to me.
Well, true, I want you to know, true. And Patrick, I want you to remember this. I still have not given up my dream of becoming a professional dancer. So you keep that dream alive. if things break and I'm really able to make the move to professional dancing, I will let you all know, and you'll be the first ones to find out.
Yeah. Send me your videos. Send me some clips.
If you become a dancer, mate, I'm going to shift to being a post-millennial in my eschatology. Now, the reason I called you a mastermind, Patrick, is that my memory is years ago, you, me, Ben Dalvang at the Westminster Bookstore conspired to get a beautifully produced one-volume edition of James Bannerman's Church of Christ with the Latin footnotes translated, produced by Banner. And to me, that book, it would be in my top 10 Christian books, my top one ecclesiology books. And I think you were the man who delivered it as an inexpensive but beautiful book for the American audience.
It's a great book.
Yeah. Like any person who does anything well, there's a big team behind it. So I was just a part of that process. But yes, I do remember working on that. That was a favorite book of mine in seminary. Read it cover to cover. And since we've done that promotion, which was years ago now, back when before you guys became middle-aged, and we've gone through several print runs of that since then. So it's out there. People are reading it.
Yeah, it's an extremely important book. What is your take on the state of American Christian publishing? We've never had a Christian publisher on this program before. What's your take on the state of Christian publishing in America, and then particularly on the Reformed world that Banner of Truth generally caters to?
Yeah, obviously I'll be most aware with the Reformed world. I don't spend a lot of time outside of that circle. Banner of Truth gets invitations to many places, thankfully, but it's mostly in Reformed places that we go. It's mostly Reformed customers that we serve, but not exclusively. A book like Valley Vision, it is so broad in its appeal that Christians of all types will read it, and it goes into all corners. But I wouldn't say that about most of our books, although we're hopeful that it'll continue to reach Christians everywhere. I think the state of publishing in the United States in particular is very positive. We've probably never seen more demand for our books. And when I speak to other Reformed Christian publishers, they share the same testimony. When COVID hit, a lot of publishers noticed a sizable spike in demand. There's many reasons that could lead to that. I think partly when COVID hit, Amazon stopped selling books because they were so busy selling, toilet paper and other household needs. Mm-hmm. And because of that, Christians said, okay, if I can't get my books delivered for 2 months on Amazon, where am I going to go? They went looking online for Christian booksellers. So Westminster Books, Reformation Heritage Books, Banner of Truth has a sizable online presence. Other Reformed publishers were found as well. We got new customers. We've retained those customers. They've enjoyed us buying directly from Christian publishers. That's increased sales. I think partly as well as, the church in America is feeling the pinch of culture more than it used to. Mm-hmm. There's two things. You guys will be more familiar with this than I am, but people who are on, just loosely associated with Christianity, they said, okay, it's not for me. I don't want to take all this social pressure. But those who are united to Christ recognize, okay, the fight might get harder. I need to be reading better books.
Yeah.
So at least Banner, we've seen more and more people coming up to us asking, what is Calvinism? Who are the Puritans? I've been told I should read this stuff. I've listened to a John Piper sermon, but I want to go deeper. I want to be more connected historically with the Christian faith and the confession from years gone by. And so we're seeing just huge growth in readership. Almost like there's a whole new generation of customers out there who are getting into Reformed literature. I don't know how much of a litmus test it is from my vantage point about how the church is doing in America, but by seeing the amount of Puritan literature go out, it's very encouraging. So I do think those who are staying in the faith are reading better material, and they're getting better equipped, and they know the theology better. At least that's my hope.
Yeah. So the rumors about you all becoming the new publisher for Joel Osteen, that's probably not true.
No, not until they found the cash behind his toilet. We were really You know, we thought this could maybe work. No, of course not.
Okay. So that's interesting to me. So, currently kind of what are some of your top titles right now that you're moving the most of?
Valley Vision is a perennial bestseller. Catherine Voss's Child Story Bible. We just did a new edition of that in May. That sold through, you know, by the end of the summer. We have a new edition of Burkhoff's Systematic Theology. We sold 900 sets of Manton last summer.
Yeah,
I mean, wow. We had a big deal on it, but it just shows you the kind of appetite there is. We're talking about like big,
big,
meaty, reformed books.
Yeah.
There's another movement, which I think is a little more popular on the other side of the pond, which is, okay, Christians need small, accessible, 100-page Christian books.
Yeah.
What we're finding is that people want meatier, heavier, deeper literature.
Right.
Stuff that excites them, stuff that pushes them, stuff that sanctifies them and stretches them. So, you know, those books would be a couple. Obviously, the Puritan paperback series is our bread and butter.
Right.
There's nothing probably better for someone who's never heard about Banner of Truth to get into than to pick up a Puritan paperback. Right. And we're seeing a huge interest in Puritan paperbacks right now. One more thing about like the state of American Christian publishing. I should say I'm just referring to the sales side of it. On the other side of it, I think we need godly publishers who have good motives and who have good theological distinctives and good theological minds behind content selection. I think that's probably one of the biggest concerns facing Christian publishers is who's making the decisions about what gets printed and what is driving them. I think that's one of the things I'm so thankful about with Banner of Truth and other like-minded publishers like Banner, who really have pastors and theologians making those editorial decisions.
Yeah.
There are some, even in the Reformed Pale, who really outsource that decision, or they more have sales and marketing guys making those decisions. What are the demands? What are the needs? What would really be hot and sell today? Let's talk to this guy who can probably write about that. Let's contract with him. And then we have this like theological editorial review board that we're going to send stuff to them. If they vet it, if they okay it, then we're greenlit and we're go.
Yeah.
Banner of Truth does very differently than that. It's pastors and theologians getting together, asking the question, what would meet the needs of the church? Okay. This is a guy who's writing well, the Lord's blessing his work. You know, he's got a book on this subject. We'll approve it. And then the sales and marketing guys get involved afterwards. Mm-hmm. Those are two very different processes.
Yeah.
And they result in two different kinds of publishing mindsets. And I think the more Christian publishers here in the States and across the pond can think in a more of a ministry-minded way, we will serve the church better long-term. I mean, you ask these questions like, why are these guys getting published? And why is this book out there? And why should they read this guy on this book? You know, sometimes it's because of marketing and sales guys who are making the calls on that, who aren't as theologically connected to the ministry and the theological process.
One of the things I've always liked about Banner is it's a publisher that knows what it does well, if I could put it that way. You can't just read Banner books. You know, there are theological things that Banner doesn't really touch, that kind of thing, but Banner knows what it does well, and it's continued to do it. It's resisted that temptation to broaden its brief. I first came across it when I was in college, I think through friends recommending Martin Lloyd-Jones's series on Romans to me. And I was struck then that, this is a pretty narrow publisher, but everything it publishes seems to be trustworthy and worth reading. And nearly 40 years on, that seems to be the case today.
And I would imagine that when Banner first launched, it was not a foregone conclusion that reprinting old Puritan works was going to just really catch on and be a success. I mean, I would imagine these guys were taking a kind of a big risk and, you know, basically driven by a hope that the church would pick these things up and begin benefiting from them again. But
yeah, it was a conviction that those are the kinds of books that the church needed. And so it was worthwhile doing it, even if it failed.
Right.
And I mean, many people forget, but Banner started first with a monthly magazine. The Banner magazine was the first thing we ever did. And we're actually coming up on our 700th issue in the next month. But it started with that conviction that the way the Lord had blessed these men of old, men like Edwards, Whitfield, you know, the Princetonians, looking at the books that they were reading, the Puritans, the Reformers, saying these are the resources that the Lord has used to bless the church in powerful ways. If we could get those in front of people, just with the prayer that the Lord would bless it, then there might be a ministry here. But there was not a lot of confidence in those early days. Confidence in the Lord, but not confidence in the banner. Yeah. And the story of the banner has been the Lord's faithfulness to us.
Yeah. And the thing that I've always liked about Banner as well is they have had a reckless disregard for what is cool.
Hold up. Wait a second. One second, I'm a mastermind, cool. Like, you got to stay in your lane.
Well, this is what's genius is that in strenuously avoiding any attempt to be cool, Banner ends up being kind of cool. If that makes sense, it's kind of like going over to a friend's house when you're in high school and their 50-year-old dad is desperately trying to be cool. And you just roll your eyes and say, oh my goodness. But you've got another friend and you go over to their house and their parents just act like great parents. And that's the house where you want to hang out in. And Banner to me had the, and maybe it's because of its English roots and there's absolutely nothing cool about being from England. And you know that just didn't register.
I think that was a racist. Comment, Matt. I feel very triggered. This is no longer a safe space for me.
Yeah,
but yeah, exactly. But I've always loved that about the ethos of Banner is almost an obsessive concern with the content.
They're always cool, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah.
I mean, what is coolness? Purchased authenticity. So I feel like people want something that's authentic and that's what cool, people are trying to be cool, trying to look authentic. I do think Banner has been convicted. Like you said, Carl, we've stayed in our lane. We know who we are. We know what we love and we're going to promote that. And I feel like when people discover a Banner book, they think we're honest. You know, we're not just a business first. We have to sell things to stay alive, but we're a ministry. They find the content faithful to the scriptures over, you know, all the books they read, and they connect with something. Probably the best description of Banner books is, if you don't mind if I read it to you, from Morris Roberts. It was from a Banner magazine that he used to be the editor back in the 80s. And this is from an article in 1988. And I read it and I thought, well, that's the best description of Banner books I've ever read. And I think it kind of speaks to what we're talking about. He says, the best single word to express the effect these books had on one is the word exciting. It was not just that one was informed or challenged or helped or inspired. It was all of these things and something more as well. The excitement they generated in the soul was akin to falling in love. Life became heaven upon earth. One saw visions, one dreamed dreams. One read late into the night and one went back to the Bible with new eyes. One died to the world. One saw God as big and desirable. One saw the world as a drop of the bucket. I know that's maybe a bit colorful for some, but I find that to be an apt description of what people discover when they read a Banner book and discover this lineage of godly men that the Lord has raised up and recorded for us to benefit from.
The first book I ever got from Banner, it was 1991. I was a youth minister. I was in between college and seminary, and I got the 6-volume Lloyd-Jones series on Ephesians. And this was I got it because somebody had really recommended it to me, and I'd never read anything like reading Lloyd-Jones. And I opened up the first volume and saw that he had, I think it's 6 sermons on the first verse, something like that. But I began to read it, and it was not like anything I'd ever read before. And then several years later, I got my first Puritan book, and it was a Banner title as well. And I got it because I thought, okay, I had just started reading J.I. Packer for a couple of years, and I said, okay, I've got to do it. I've got to start reading some of these Puritans. And I got A Body of Divinity by Thomas Watson, which is his commentary on the Confession of Faith. And I had that description you just read, Patrick, was very much what I felt like as I began reading A Body of Divinity by Thomas Watson. It was a remarkably important time for me when I took the time to read through that book. And it remains still one of my top 10 favorite books. It's one that I always recommend to people. And you get a real good a sense of the priorities of the Puritans and how they wrote when you read a guy like Watson. And he's rather accessible, even though he's a Puritan, he's rather accessible. But the zeal, the passion for experimental religion, the zeal for application that these men had, where they every point would have 10 or 12 points of application, is just remarkable. And again, just unique from anything else you can read.
What
out
would
there.
You, I mean, we may have listeners, Patrick, who perish the thought, but have never read a Banner of Truth book. What would you recommend? If I say to you, recommend to our listeners five books that Banner produces that you would say should lie at the heart of any Christian's library, what would they be?
Oh, great question. And it's hard to imagine anyone of your listeners so influenced by your recommendations that they would, you know, I would be like, yeah, I'm a different podcast. You guys would be surely be pushing our books all the time. I think one of, just like for Mortification of Spin, one of the, you know, misnomers would be that you guys are grumpy. One of the misnomers about Puritan paperbacks or that Puritan writings is that they're inaccessible. I was in a study group with a bunch of guys in our church, and we were reading through different books. And we were reading this book by an author, I won't mention who it was, but a modern book on the Puritans. And it was a bit of a slog. It was good content, edifying book, but it was a bit of a slog. After that book, we decided, let's just jump into the Puritans. And we started reading Thomas Watson's Godly Man's Picture. And one of our deacons, godly guy, I mean, he's not you know, university professor. He's a faithful deacon, good guy. And he was sharing at the next meeting, like, oh, I'm so glad we are reading this. This is so much easier. And what I think what he was picking up on was that,
you know,
guys like Watson, Flavel, Sibbes, a number of the Puritans, not all of them, but a number of them, they're direct. They write with very illustrative mm-hmm. language, which evokes a lot of thinking and meditation. They're pithy. And they kind of get to it. Now, I know they get to it a lot, and they will, you know, okay, let's get to it on these 12 points of applications. But I don't, they're not as intimidating as people think. I would not hesitate. I know guys would disagree with me on this. I can picture them right now in my mind, and they're in the Christian publishing world. But I would not hesitate to give a Puritan paperback to a new Christian. I think the main issue, and Ian Murray's always been strong on this, and I'm just echoing his words here. The main issue for Christians in reading is spiritual hunger. Do they desire to learn? Do they want to learn? If they want to learn, they can read Bannerman, they can read the Puritans, they can read these guys. And when they read them, I'm like, oh my, these guys don't waste words. They're not telling you, you know, 12 stories about their lives and then a couple of biblical applications. They're just giving you the Bible, right, and they're applying it. And they wrote in a way that it's evergreen. So it's just as relevant today as it was back then. Anyways, I'm getting a bit on my soapbox here. So I would say start with the Puritan paperback. A Godly Man's Picture by Thomas Watson is usually the place I recommend people to go. Or Richard Sibbes' Bruce Reed. I find Sibbes and Watson very accessible, very readable. Mm. I have not met a person who came away from Bruce Reed and said, oh, that was a waste of time.
Can I just say that Richard Sibbes was master of my college at Cambridge? Big plug for the home team.
May. Hey, it's your show. You can say whatever you want. You got the mic. And then I would probably recommend a biography. I think one of the really neat things about Banner books is we have these older biographies, and they just open these worlds to you. A personal favorite of mine is John Payton's autobiography. You read that book and you wonder, did men like this really live? Were there Christians who had this kind of boldness? And I know, and we're talking to a church history professor here, questions of hagiography will come up and the different intent behind writing church history. But I so love Banner's emphasis on history for the church, history to edify, history to encourage, not just to put these men on a pedestal, but to say, look what the Lord did through these men. It was the Lord by his Spirit who did these wonderful things through Payton. And he can do the same through Christians today who trust on him and depend on him. So John Payne's autobiography, I mean, I couldn't put the book down when I started reading it. My wife and I named our third child Payton after him, P-A-T-O-N. Not Patton, as some have popularized, but I believe are repenting of in number. But John Payton's autobiography is excellent. The Life of Martin Lloyd-Jones, Carl, I know that's at least the first volume for you is seminal, and you've spoken about it.
I bought the second volume on honeymoon and read it, much to my wife's disgust, actually. but I thought that I would say the first volume, anybody going to the pastorate should read that first volume. In fact, you've just inspired me to revisit it. No, I'm not going back into the past strip, by the way, but it's hey. The first volume is profound.
Yeah. So, and I guess that's a good segue to say really anything by Ian Murray that piques your interest, I'd recommend. I find in his writing a wonderful mix of historical, you know, story, devotional application. Your conscience will be pricked. Questions will be asked. And then theological instruction. When Ian writes, he can't help but make theological application through history. So I find it a very edifying history lesson when I read his stuff. Life of Lloyd-Jones, Forgotten Spurgeon would be yes. another good one. And then from there, something devotional, perhaps one of our best devotionals that is not as well known as Valley Vision would be Voices from the Past, which yes. is a daily devotional. Yeah. And it gives you larger sections of Puritan writings. And actually, one of the things that people come to us with around regarding Valley Vision is to say, hey, who wrote these prayers? Why doesn't it say at the end of each prayer who wrote it? And that's because Arthur Bennett, when he edited those, he actually amalgamated different parts of mm-hmm. prayers. And we don't actually know whose prayers those are. Yeah. They could be a bit of Sibbes, a little bit of Spurgeon, who wasn't historically a Puritan, but a little bit of, Flavel, Brooks, or whoever it might be. So that sometimes people are a little frustrated. They want to know, because they want to read more of this stuff. They don't know where to go next. One of the neat things about Voice from the Past is that he lists, Richard Rushing lists the different people that he's referenced. And so you can go back and read more of maybe Samuel Ward or Thomas Brooks or Jeremiah Burroughs. And it's a great springboard into deeper works, but it's also just in and of itself stands alone as a very edifying daily devotional.
Patrick, if people want to find Banner online, where do they go?
Bannertruth.org.
There you go.
Can't miss it.
Yep. Well, man, I could talk about this longer and longer because, reading the Puritans and, like I said, not just the Puritans, but other books that Banner has produced, like several of the biographies you mentioned, were very important to me when I was a new pastor, and they continue to be important to me. They fed me spiritually. I became a better preacher because of the books I was reading. And so one of the things I tell people about the Puritans is that when I hear Protestants lament that Protestantism doesn't have a good tradition of spirituality the way, say, Roman Catholicism does, I just shake my head and say, no, they're called the Puritans. And the Puritans are the best reflection, in my opinion, of biblical spirituality, if you want to call it that, that we have. And so Protestantism has a wonderful tradition of spiritual writing that reflects the biblical understanding of what that means. And I just can't encourage you all enough to begin reading. And I think some of the suggestions that Patrick gave are excellent places to start. I also want to second what Patrick said about not waiting until someone's been a Christian for 20 years to put a Puritan in their hands. What you said about A Godly Man's Picture by Thomas Watson is absolutely true. Get that to a new believer. And they won't wade through 20 stories that a person's telling about his life, but they'll get right to the Bible. And I have found that a lot of new believers, that's exactly what they're hungering for. And so let's be good stewards of the opportunities we have with new and young believers to get them the best stuff in our Protestant tradition. So, Patrick, thanks so much for joining us today. I want to say to our listeners, if you would please, go to our website, mortificationofspin.org, and there you'll find a link that we'll provide to the Banner's website where you can go on and peruse more works and read about what they are doing and get great descriptions of the books that they are producing. And also, you can register to win a copy of Thomas Watson's A Body of Divinity, which is one of my top 10 favorite books. It is excellent. And so you can go there to register to win a copy of that. And while you're there, you may want to think about making a donation to the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals so that they can continue to provide you with this sort of content. And Carl and I won't have to be out begging alms in a week or two. Right, Carl?
Well, I hope not. Yeah. I hope not.
I caught Carl kind of dozing at that point. So I just wanted to wake him up. But
your voice always has that effect on me, Todd.
Yeah, I like to lull people asleep. The dulcet tones of my baritone. Well, listen,
kind
folks.
Of walking sleep apnea is what
I'm Well, listen, folks. Again, our thanks to Patrick Daly, our appreciation to Banner of Truth. May their tribe increase. And we look forward to being with you all next time. Thanks.
And the drums went boom and the cornets played and the jukebox went all the way and the kids and the dogs were laughing as they ran. And the banner man held his banner high with an alleluia in his eye. I wish that I could be a banner man.
Thanks for listening to Mortification of Spin, a podcast of the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals. For more on topics like this, visit mortificationofspin.org, where you can find other articles by Carl and Todd, browse the archive of past episodes, and make a donation. We'll talk to you next time on Mortification of Spin.
For me, I mean, I started reading Puritans because I was reading J.I. Packer. And I remember the very first thing I picked up was, I think, A Body of Divinity by Thomas Watson. Yeah, yeah. So
Body of Divinity by Watson is quite a common entry point, actually. Mm-hmm.
I think to this day, he's still my favorite Puritan to read.
Probably pictures as well. Were the pictures in the book?
Too? There's got to be. I want Banner to make more like picture books, pop-up books, maybe a pop-up Thomas Watson, something like that. So
it sounds like you guys are ready for the show. I mean, I should be asking you the question.
Western Reformed Seminary, now located in Puyallup, Washington, is a Bible-believing Presbyterian seminary endorsed by the Bible Presbyterian Church. Their mission is to prepare church leaders who are spiritually grounded, knowledgeable, capable, and dedicated through solid theological training. Degree programs include the Masters of Divinity, academic degrees such as Masters of Biblical or Theological Studies, as well as the Masters of Church Ministry, with an emphasis in biblical counseling, missions, or church ministry. Non-degree students at Western Reformed Seminary may take any class as a standalone for credit or audit. Although residency classes offer the best learning environment, Western Reformed Seminary offers interactive synchronous classes for students unable to attend in person, as well as concentrated classes in January and May every year. The spring semester begins on January 24th. For more information, visit wrs.edu or email registrar@wrs.edu. Western Reformed Seminary.